Joseph, for those of you who may not be aware, what is Tonomus.neom?
So Tonomus.neom is the technology subsidiary of the bigger, broader company, Neom. And we are responsible for building and implementing and designing and architecting all the technology to enable the world's first cognitive city, which is Neom, and to also deliver that technology to the rest of the world. So that's our two kind of dual mandate. You know, Neom is in Saudi Arabia, but it's for the world. So that's our dual mandate.
And you just used the word cognitive. Now, a lot of people talk about smart cities or digitally enabled cities, but you make a point of using the word cognitive. What is the difference and why is it important?
The basic difference is, so smart cities all focus on this notion of real-time information. And, you know, real time, get it in real time. And COVID showed you that real time is too late. That, yeah, I got it, but now what? Damage is already done. And so the idea of moving to a cognitive city is one that says it is not being about real time, it's about being predictive and proactive. It's about knowing what will happen. And so how can I, by knowing that, how do I eliminate friction from your lives? It also means that it changes the relationship between you and the city. In a smart city, it's transactional. It's one time. In a cognitive city, there's a relationship. It's feedback. There's a learning loop. I do this, then I get this information. I do this, and I get this information. So there's this change in my relationship with the city and the people around me. I'm part of a bigger ecosystem that constantly is getting feedback. And the whole notion is telling you to be more predictive and more proactive. And the last thing I would say about it is that because you focus so much on real-time information and what's one-time transactional, smart cities always have examples that are very siloed. So I have smart lighting or smart mobility, or I have smart housing, but there's always very specific examples. In a cognitive city, you're talking about interaction of systems together. So it's not about one point of the city being enabled. It's about an entire ecosystem working together, having a common data architecture. So those are the main differences. That's why we're so excited about cognitive, because we think it'll fundamentally really change the life, your general experience of how you live, work, and engage in a city.
And I guess, you know, the reason why smart cities tend often to be siloed is because that's kind of always the way they've been through decades or hundreds of years. But you have the ability with Neom to actually build something from the ground up, from scratch. Yeah. What freedom does that give you, and what are you doing with that freedom?
It's amazing. So freedom that it gives you, I think, is obviously to not so much focus on what you think the answer is. When you're working within a brownfield environment, you're always trying to focus on integration and solving the problem. So 90% of your thinking is on, here's the answer. What Neom really allows us to do is question what we believe to be true. So you spend a considerable amount of your time questioning the basic concepts, things that you thought or you assumed to be true. So it gives you this freedom. And by questioning what you believe to be true, it allows you to actually take bigger steps forward. You don't sit here and wonder about the future. You can't pick the future. But if you start by asking yourselves, well, why can't we have trust throughout in a city? Why can't we have a trust platform? Well, because the consent management is all over the place. Well, why don't we have centralized consent management? Well, why don't we build a centralized consent management platform? What would it look like? And you can start having topics and you can start moving forward. So it's very freeing in that regards. It's extremely challenging, however, because you're trying to also at the same time future-proof yourself, because you do realize that whatever you do now, you know you're going to get it wrong. So you have to get comfortable with that. We're going to get it wrong. So when we get it wrong, how are we able to change it? And so it does force us to think about virtualization a lot. How do we eliminate hardware? How do we make things more software programmability? The belief that, you know, software is much more easier to change in light of, we know what we're going to get a mistake. So those are the things that I think that make it very interesting. I also think, lastly, I would say is people and culture. I think one of the common themes, one of the things that I didn't realize, lots of things I've learned, but when I first came to NEOM, if you ask me, I would tell you that the most important thing is having a common culture. And that if you have a common culture, that's your last bastion of competitive differentiation. I don't believe that anymore. And that's because when you come to NEOM, you understand that it's impossible to have a common culture. Cultures everywhere. There's so many different cultures. But what you have to do is you have to have a common set of values. And those values you have to define and live and preach every single day to really get the power of having this inclusive, diverse workforce. So you drive all this participation. And we spend a lot of time. It may sound like it's soft skills and that. No, we spend a lot of time on making sure that we are true to our values and that we're updating those values and that we understand what direction we're going to in every decision we make, always going back to, does it fit within those core values? Are we violating a core value? And it's really, really, it's been a huge learning for me as I think about my management style and really ensuring that you have that strong foundation of values.
And how will it be, you know, living or working or spending time in NEOM? You know, what type of environment will it be like, and how is technology feeding into that environment that is, you know, that is consistent with the purpose and the culture that you're mentioning?
The biggest difference is it's not technology led. And I think people get, they take aback by that, meaning that technology is in the background. You're driving the car. You're in front. You are driving and choosing the direction of where you want to go to your life. So the whole city, the whole work environment is built around how do I make you the best of you possible? So whether that's exposing you, giving you a consent management platform, which says you put in all your preferences one time and it applies to every single application, every single interaction that happens in NEOM, and you can get a proxy for that if you don't know. So like, maybe you're not I'm not a medical expert, so let me let my doctor set my preferences for that. So that's one thing. So it starts with you. And then also, once we understand what your preferences are, then what you don't see is there's this common data architecture. So what that means is really simply is that if you're in transportation and you need to know when trucks are being loaded off the port or when sports is having some sporting event, so that you can ensure that to get from point A to point B is the most efficient. All of that information, you don't realize, but all of that information is seamlessly made available so that the system can easily provide you with a frictionless environment. So we like to talk, the example that we like to use about getting to NEOM, what's it like, is if you think about like your basic travel experience, it sucks today, right? You got to pack the freaking luggage, you get it in, then you got to drag it down the steps, then you got to get in the car, then you go to the person at the counter, you check it in, then you get off the plane and you got to wait for the freaking luggage, then you go to the hotel and you got kids, they take your luggage, now you're waiting for it to get in the room, my God, kids are screaming. That is not an experience that you want to replicate a lot. The crazy thing is about that whole experience is we know, if you give us permission, we know when your plane leaves. We know what hotel you're going to. We know what clothes you packed because you told us. We know what activities you want to do. You can see the room. You can see where you want to put the rooms. So in a NEOM experience, you literally go to the site. You see your 3D rendering of the room. You choose it. We give you a recommended clothes list. You say exactly where I want my clothes to be, here in the room. You click the button. Yes, that's it. We pick up your bag at your house, and next time you see it is when you walk into your room, and there it is. That's the experience that we're able to take out all that stuff because the city was able to predict, understand exactly where you are. We know if your plane is going to be late. We know what happens when you arrive. So all of that can be coordinated in a fashion. And so that's what living in NEOM is like. It's like being able to do things, giving you back more time, frictionless living, as we like to call it.
And some people could look at that and see it as a utopia. Other people could look at that and see it as a privacy nightmare. You know, where I am in Europe, you know, there's all kinds of concern about that. But I guess what you're saying is there's a trade-off between the the sort of the privacy you're willing to give up with the benefits you're willing to receive from doing that. And as long as you get that equation right, it'll be fine.
That's exactly, you know, and I tell people all the time, Needham is going to house 7 million people. It is not for 7 billion people. Let me be really clear. It is not for 7 billion people on the planet. So there are some people who are not going to be comfortable with that level. And that's okay. What we want to do, we got to earn the right, right? So you're going to have some early adopters. One of our basic values is trust, right? We never violate individual trust, because without trust, we don't get data. Without data, we can't create value. And so trust goes throughout everything we do, putting you in the center of it. Your experience, you know, within Needham, it's kind of interesting. I was talking to my cousin and my nephew. I was 8 years old, right? And people in my generation will say they love the game, right? They say, oh, they're gamers. You know, it's really interesting. They don't consider it a game. They consider it life. We call it that they're playing a game. They don't. What are you talking about, man? It's just life to them. And that's the difference. When we consider privacy and our rights, they're going to consider it life. It is simply living. And if you deliver me a great customer experience, then I'm going to continue to visit you. If you deliver me a crappy experience, I'm not going to. I'm gonna do something else. And so that's where I think there's a huge understanding there. The last thing on this topic, I think, is also really important, like you reminded me of, which is, and I call this the singular reality. What you're going to see in Needham, what used to be the case is, you used to be either really good at digital or you're really good at the physical world. So you're either an Amazon or you're a Walmart, right? You put your modes. Where we're headed towards with cognitive, it's not whether you're good at digital or whether you're good at physical, is if can you bridge the two? Can you create the divide between the two so that you become spatially aware? The cognitive Needham will be the first spatially aware place, meaning that if you're physical or digital, it's going to blend and make sure you have the optimum experience for you. And that, I think, is going to be crazy cool.
And building on the physical and digital, and one of the things that's frustrated me over the years is that a lot of technology is built without considering the physical implications of that technology. For example, blockchain, great technology, but nobody thought about the environmental impact. Generative AI, same thing. Nobody thought about the environment. So Europe now have a chance to build the largest greenfield kind of technology project in history anywhere. How are you considering the sustainability and environmental impacts of what you do?
Yeah, really, really important. And this is where it goes back to those common values, right? One of our core values is not environmentally neutral, it's environmentally positive. So it's not how do we merely don't cause any damage, it's how do we actually replenish? How do we give back? And so lots of things, the most obvious, so in the very design of the line, right, the technology that we're designing, I mean, in a traditional city is you put your hand on a table, that represents a traditional city. Well, if you turn your hand up 90 degrees, now you have the line. So all that space to the left and to the right, we're going to give back, whether that's helping the nature reserve bring in species of plants and species of animals that have never been, that haven't walked in this area for hundreds of years, or bringing them back to replenish the area. So one is tracking and helping our environmental teams and sectors really ensure that we're using and staying true to 95% of the land of Needham not being used or occupied, where only 5% of that land is where we're going to use. So one is making sure that we're true to that. And then you get into the second things, which is more around compute power. You know, our blockchain is not like proof of work, obviously moving away from that type of design, a much different, way more effective type of technology, but also in terms of how we power our data centers, right? Really looking at, again, we live in a very unique environment. We have wind, we have solar, we have hydrogen, right? The wind is a steady stream of wind that comes in through the day and in the evening. And so because of that steady flow of wind, it gives us an actual ability to create really data centers that are mostly or 100% renewable. So we're super excited about that. We're super excited about advancements in liquid cooling. to dramatically reduce the amount of power that a data center requires in the very first place. And then you get into all of the technology and switches and IoT devices. And the thing that I would say is that one of the things we're really looking at is if a computer vision, if a computer can see something with its eye, then by definition, whatever it's looking at can become connected, which means that you're not putting in a bunch of sensors and devices everywhere. You're creating virtual sensors. They're not physical. Software is physically looking and saying, this whole thing is connected. Before, you got to go and connect power cells, sensors, everything. Stop. If you can see it, if you can see it and understand it, then by definition, it becomes connected. And then you're able to start building learning loops and things that says, I only need this on when I'm able to use it because I predict what's going to happen. So it's like this, you start from the core value of really, how do we replenish the planet, not just keep it core neutral? And you start that as your core value and you don't violate that value. And you constantly ask yourself in every piece of tech that you do. Also, we also ask, inclusivity is really important to us as well. Wherever you are, however you are on this planet, disabled, not, whatever, we want to make the technology work for you because we fundamentally believe that's the best way to create value. So that's kind of how we think about it.
I guess one of the biggest topics today, one of the hottest topics in tech is generative AI. I mean, is that becoming part of the story? How are you using that technology?
It's really funny. We started several years ago, and maybe 3 or 4 years ago, maybe four years ago, and we created Aramis. And Aramis is still, it is the number one ranked Arabic natural language processing model. When we did that, what was really important is we said, as we wanted to build a world and we wanted to build solutions, what we found is you wanted to build a solution that, again, is centered on your customer base. And many of our customers speak Arabic as their first language. And so we didn't want to have a translation. No, we wanted it to be understood by them. And so that led to Aramis. We then use generative AI in construction a lot. We have a program called ADASA, or in English is like cognitive lens, if you can think of it that way, which is this predictive situational program, which allows us to measure progress on a project and see how it's going down to the centimeter accuracy without having to send out people everywhere to look and measure to see, you know, how we're doing. So that's been really, really huge. And we also use AI in terms of helping us develop ethical guidelines for AI. So it's not just on the technology side, but we're really advanced, whether that's consent management, privacy measures, AI auditing. How do we ensure we don't have bias in the algorithms? So we really are using, I would say that AI has become a basic tool set, just like any other technology tool that we use. It's not AI for AI's sake, but it's really, how do we take friction out of the process? Procurement using AI, we have several applications and projects going around procurement to ensure that we're following correct guidelines, making a competitive environment. AI is great for that. So we really used it, I would say, pretty much in all aspects of our business. We give people an opportunity to do so. But again, in like any other technology, we're very careful as to ensure that it does not violate our basic core value principles. And I think that's where a lot of people are falling down or falling short. They're just enamored by the technology, but you have to change your operating model in order to really adapt and to get the benefits of AI. And we really thought through that. It's much more of an entrepreneurial operating model, we feel, where AI, you know, resides. And at the same time, you need to make sure that you have proper testing, just like you would have in any entrepreneurial kind of endeavor. You need to have this kind of 360-degree lens on customer, employee, environment, and be able to make sure that whatever you're doing within this AI application is supporting and not violating any of those three principles. So that's kind of how we view it. And we're super excited, like everybody else. We have a higher tolerance for risk, I think, because again, we're greenfield. So I think that helps us a lot, but we're very humble in understanding that we're just at the beginning.
You mentioned at the beginning that autonomous has kind of, you know, two objectives. One is to kind of manage the technology infrastructure and environment around Neon, but there's another purpose, another yes. objective, and that's beyond Neon. What can you tell us more about that? What would that look like?
So part of Saudi's 2030 vision is to remove its dependency on oil and to become a national power, a global power for technology. And so core part of our vision is to take the learnings or problems that we've solved from NEOM, because NEOM is a microcosm of the world. A lot of people don't realize NEOM has, 16 plus sectors. So healthcare, media, environment, education. And so I get to work with some of the smartest minds in the world around these are the problems they're seeing in the sectors. And as we create solutions, we monetize those solutions. So Autonomous is going to market. ADASA is out and we're selling that, having great success, that 360-degree kind of view of construction and what's happening. And that could be applied to any vertical. We're having great success with that. We have Marana, which is our digital twin platform that takes in all these data, different data sources, allows you to quickly build virtual models. That's doing very well in the marketplace. We have a consent management platform. We have the world's first federated data model called NEOS that's doing well. So we're selling and producing and making that information available to the world. And it's been great. We get a lot of customer feedback, just like everybody else. We're a very young startup in that regards, but we're happy with the results. And we just got to keep learning and getting better every day.
So the tools that you're building are not just for the NEOM project, they're for the wider, and it's anybody, I guess, who's...
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, we're obviously, our target markets, we start with the GCC, then Europe, India, Africa, and then eventually US. But yeah, I mean, without a doubt, we're fully open for business, got a full sales team and partners and nine plus partners in our channel partner program. We sell through channel partners because it's easier to expand. But the whole point is we're not doing something that's theoretical. That can only be used in a theoretical environment. These are solutions that can be put into brownfield environments and solve basic problems that people have today. So that's what we're really excited about.
Let me switch gears, and we're coming to the end here, and ask maybe a little bit about now. You and I have known each other for a decade. You've done lots of things in your career. When we first met, you're in Silicon Valley. How does this role as CEO of Autonomous sort of compare with some of the other things you've done?
I would say everything in my life has kind of prepared me, I think, for this. I didn't realize the direction, but there was a better plan. I'm a huge fan of inclusion and diversity. I've always felt that the more participation you can drive, the greater the value you can create. The world is a platform economy. This role is the ultimate role in terms of inclusion and diversity. I mean, I think I have 80, 90 different nationalities. When I walk into cafeteria, you might hear 30 different languages being spoken. It is extremely rewarding and challenging to try to bring all these different cultures and ways of looking and get to a common set of values that we can actually drive. So that in that regards, it's extremely rewarding. It's extremely difficult, but it is incredibly, incredibly, incredibly rewarding. It also really opened my eyes as well. The world today focuses on what makes us different. I mean, you look on the news and that's all you hear is how different we are. And the thing that I have learned is, you know what? I don't care where you are, man. Wherever you are in any part of the world, everybody just wants to make a living. They want to provide for their kids. They want to get a good education. That they want to have a healthy life. There's so many things that we agree on as a general populace. I was teasing, we were joking and laughing that, we're like somewhere in a hut in Africa, there's this guy telling his wife, "You moved my spear. Where is it? You moved my spear." And I'm like, we're all the same, man. We're all the same. Yes, there's these small differences, but the one thing I've learned here is that it is so powerful. If the world gets behind a particular object or a particular movement, we can fix it. We can move. I think you saw that with the COVID, right? The world got behind. Let's figure out how do we find a vaccine for this thing, man. And look what happened. And I think if we can learn from that, and that's what I'm learning, that the CEO of Autonomous, when I get this organization aligned, man, there's nothing we can't do. And so that's been very, very rewarding.
And maybe one last question, because you mentioned it a few times, is the importance of values. What are your values? What do you see as the most important values that you live by?
You know, personally, for me, respect for yourself and respect for others, I think is probably the most important value. I coach a lot of basketball, and I always told my team, you know, respect the game, respect yourself, and respect your teammates. And what it means when I say respect is understand that every single person that you encounter has something to offer you. You may not, don't focus on what you don't agree with. You'll never get past point A. There's plenty of that stuff. But focus on what is it that I can get, that I can learn from this individual. And I use the word respect. When I say respect, I mean an understanding and appreciation that every human being has something to offer. And if you can, and my goal, my job in life is to figure out from every single person I meet, what is their superpower? What did God give them as a superpower that can help the world be better? And that's kind of how I look at it. So I tell my team that all the time, know your superpower and seek out other superpowers. And together we can really transform the world. So we're pretty excited, feel very fortunate to have had this experience, and it's been great.
Great, super.